You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. What makes a tool or a gadget a pleasure to use? You know, have you found yourself looking around your toolbox, you have electronic gadgets, and you say to yourself, this is such a pleasure to use this device. It knows what I want to do. It knows it lets me do it. It almost seems to know, what I want to do before I do it and lets me do that. Or maybe on the other end, you have something just the opposite. You're saddled with a gadget with so many blinking lights and buttons and dials or menus, nested menus. I can't stand nested menus that they defy it to you to find an easy shortcut for you to do what you want to do. Well, we're going to be talking about simplicity for the rest of the hour. Simplicity in technology, simplicity in design, how to make technology work better for people. For example, how does the new iPhone rate? Is that the ultimate technology in a new kind of device? What do you think? Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. My guest is John Maida. He is author of the book, The Laws of Simplicity. It's out from MIT Press. He's Associate Director of Research at MIT's Media Lab and the E. Rudge and Nancy Allen Professor of Media Arts and Sciences there. He joins us from the MIT campus. Welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi there. The laws of simplicity. And there are laws in the book you've written.
Well, there's 10 laws and you shouldn't break any of them.
Don't break the laws.
No,
what is the...
It's okay.
tell us why you wrote this and what... we'll go through the laws in a minute, but why did you find the need to write this? I'm sure you must have some gadgets you love and gadgets you hate.
Well, it all comes from the fact that I went to MIT as a classical computer science student and then left and went to art school after that to destroy my brain. And came back to technology with a kind of a different attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And as a professor here at MIT, I realized the T stands for technology. So it's hard to escape it on campus. So one day I was on Cape Cod, where we hide from technology at MIT, and on the beach, and discovered that the letters MIT occur in perfect sequence in the word simplicity, S-I-M-P-L-I-C-I-T-Y, but also in the word complexity. And I thought this was a kind of an omen, and I had to figure this out, simplicity versus complexity, and then we got to look at the laws that might underlie that.
Mm-hmm. So let's go through some of your favorite laws of simplicity. Which ones are broken the most?
Oh, well, it turns out of 10 laws, there's a high probability that some will be broken.
Mm-hmm.
I think my most favorite one is the law of time, the idea that savings in time feel like simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
It's that great feeling you have when you're in like line in the airport and suddenly you have a brand new Homeland Security line open for you.
Right.
And you're like, all right, I've saved time. That made it so much simpler. So saving in time feels really good.
Mm-hmm. Let's go through the first law. The first law is reduce.
Yes.
Why is that a law?
Well, it's the really core law, really. It's the fact that the way to achieve simplicity is through reducing something to its essence, which is actually the hardest law to achieve. It's a matter of making something smaller, hiding complexity, but also embodying it with something good, something you'd want.
Mm-hmm. Give us a good example of that.
A good example would be like, the iPod is a perfect example of a strange kind of simplicity, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's an MP3 player we all know, and it's something you pick up and you think, wow, I really love this object. It turns out what we love is we love how simple the object is, but we also love how complex it is because it has an entire iTunes infrastructure to make it easy to buy music.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting less, but we're also getting more at the same time. Sort of the magic of simplicity.
Now, why do we have so many gadgets with so many buttons that we don't need, top-heavy menus on things? Why are they all there?
Well, it's because business has figured out that you always want more. We love having more. When you compare two objects at the store, and if one has 100 features and the other has 98 features and they cost the same, well, you'll feel gypped if you buy the 98 feature one, so you buy the 100 feature one.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
But more can be less then.
More can be less in the sense that more can give you a lot of extreme dissatisfaction, but it can be less in the sense it gives you sort of sense of peace that you have all that functionality.
Mm-hmm. You have law number two is organize. Organization makes a system of many appear fewer. Give us
right.
An example of organization.
Best example is my silverware drawer at home. You know, I have a lot of kids, and it's never organized properly, but we have an organizer. The spoons fit in one place, the fork fits in one place. And so if you didn't have that, you'd have a whole pile of different utensils. But by having organization, you open the drawer, and you think, oh, this is much simpler.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Henry in San Antone. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello, this is Henry.
Hi there.
I'm calling about a product. I'm so glad that you have this. You had this show because I this has been driving me nuts for a long time. I have this product in front of me, which is sort of a simple alarm CD alarm clock, which I thought was a great idea. I could play my CD when I wanted to wake up. Well, this has 13 buttons across the front. It's got 2 buttons on the side down below that I can't reach from my bed because, after all, it's an alarm clock. On the other side, there are 3 more switches. And let me say something kind of specifically about the buttons on the left. One of them, I think, is what you would call a slide switch that has 3 positions within a 5-millimeter range. And I just measured it 5 millimeters. The other one has 4 positions called auto buzzer, off and on, and they're within a 6-millimeter range.
Wow.
Now, how is someone supposed to, you know, deal with this late at night? Maybe when you're going to bed, you want to refocus or reset this,
right?
Or just set it. Those are the sort of things that you know. I'm just so glad I got an opportunity to stay on the air. I might just pitch it right out the window.
John, radios to me, because I've been a radio person my whole life, are the bane of our existences with all these buttons. And buttons too small, and he's right. You have to be a brain surgeon to have a fingertip fine enough to move those little buttons around.
Mm. Well, I've thought about this a lot because I travel a lot, and at every hotel, I'm not sure how to wake up because every alarm clock is different, right?
Absolutely. And, you take out your cell phone and let it wake you up.
You know, I've just given up and used the wake-up call and hope the person understands English. That works really great. But the one thing I realize now is why are there so many buttons is, let me give an example. I have an alarm clock at home that has just one button. You know, it's a one button that tells me if it's on or off. And I got to tell you, I always forget which state is on, which state is off. Mm-hmm. Because all the functionality has been made very abstract to me with a single button. The advantage of that crazy alarm clock the guest is describing of 15 buttons is they've made it easy to figure out which button does what, but they also make it confusing how to figure out how they all work in concert. That's the problem.
So what laws does that machine in your book violate?
That fits under the law 6 of context. It's the fact that what you think is actually complex is actually simple, and what is simple is actually complex.
Thanks for calling, and good luck pitching that alarm clock.
Okay, thanks very much.
Right.
Adios.
1-800-989-8255. Let's talk about the iPhone a little bit because we mentioned it in passing. How does that does it break any of your 10 laws? Does it enforce any of them?
Well, I think it satisfies many of the laws. I mean, first of all, it's desirable. That's the 7th law, emotion, because there's so much advertising pumped into it. Like, you know, even my dog wants it, or my kid wants it, or whatever. Everyone wants this thing, so that it's emotional. Mm-hmm. So even though it's actually not that easy to use, you're pushing people over the barrier by saying, I want to use it, and that changes the whole game. It's kind of like driving. You know, driving is hard to do, but because you want freedom, you sort of get there somehow. But the iPhone, I think the big invention there is the fact that you can use 2 fingers instead of 1 finger. You can have that simultaneous touch. It's the fact that you can easily zoom by sticking your thumb and index finger on the screen and sort of moving your fingers apart and together. And the reason why that enhances the whole object is it's changed the rules for how you're interacting. Because before that, you're just using one, you know, mouse button. Click here, click there, drag here, drag there. And now you can just do it all with 2 fingers. And that's magic.
Yeah. I once talked to a designer of refrigerators. Mm. And I said, he was telling me about all the features that a refrigerator could have. And it came out, you know, the refrigerator could talk to you. It could tell you what food is missing, things. I said, who thought of these things? And he said to me, you know, it's because the chip, the electronic chip that was put in, had a speaking feature. So they thought they'd had to use it. They just couldn't leave it lie there, you know, doing nothing.
Exactly. It's this. I was shopping for chips one time for a little art project I did, and it's cheaper to buy a chip that tells the time, counts, has alarm function, stopwatch, versus a chip that just counts, which doesn't make any sense. So you'll buy the cheaper chip, and like you're saying, it's like Pandora's box. You put it in your product, and you can't help resist accessing that feature.
You have a very interesting number 9 law, which is called failure. Some things can never be made simple.
Well, I kind of want to be a lawyer someday, so that's my disclaimer law. it's just reality that people are looking for the magic bullet for everything, you know. And, you know, the thing about the laws of simplicity, it isn't actually pushing just simplicity. It's actually pushing complexity as well, because if the world were simple, we'd get bored immediately. We'd want it to be complex. So I always keep that one in the back of the garage.
So should we assume that it can't be made simple, so don't try to make it simple?
Well, I mean, if you look at the demographics today, you know, with older people, you know, one of our sponsors of the Media Lab is AARP, and they tell us that in 2011, you know, the baby boomers are hitting retirement age in massive numbers. And what does that mean? It means that people will desire simplicity even more and more, because older people desire simplicity because they realize there's not much time in life to mess around with all the gadgets. Whereas a younger person has all the time, and you know, and all day they can play with their iPhone and learn how to do like thousands of features. They have time to waste. So the older you are, I think, going to third law, you want to save time because time is so much more precious.
A lot of these gadgets are just overloading us. You know, we may not be able to deal with. Maybe we're not made to be bombarded with all these choices and things like that.
And what's happening is like just like with this program, you know, companies are listening. And they're also scratching their head and asking themselves, why did we put 15 buttons on our alarm clock? So this is a natural feedback in our system, I think. Listening.
I have the same problem with car radios, which were – yeah, you too, I can see. I have a very simple car radio with it. You know, the old style, volume button on the left, station button on the right, and 6 buttons in the middle for the stations.
Old school.
It's a new radio, though. I had to search it out to find it, to install it in my car. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones to Jeff in Boulder. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi there.
I thought I'd like to talk about the granddaddy of what I think is the ultimate simplicity and art and technology, and that's the Macintosh computer, which is getting less talk these days because of the iPhone and iPod, but it's still just a great machine. And in particular, I think it's great how they took something that probably violates all the rules of simplicity, that is Unix operating system, and they and overlaid something that a 6-year-old can use but is still extremely functional for somebody who uses Unix or has to do all of those difficult, nasty tasks. And I just thought I'd like to hear someone's ideas about that, and I can take my comments off the air.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I was one of the first Macintosh buyers in 1984. I brought my Macintosh to MIT as a freshman, and so I'm a big Mac fan. Years later, though, I do realize, you know, your previous speaker mentioned how the Windows, you know, there's more viruses, and Macs there aren't as many viruses. Certain people choose certain computers. You know, certain people are certain thinking types. You know, the whole MBTI type definitions, and I have a feeling that there are certain people who like seeing things in the abstract. I mean, if you recall when the Macintosh came out, some people said, all right, a desktop, I get it. Paper, I get it. Whereas there were those people who were like, you know, that doesn't look like you're doing business.
Right.
You know, where are the rows and columns kind of thing? So there are certain brains that acclimate to a more abstract interface. And if you think about kids growing up today, they probably are very different from the way we grew up. They're very abstract. They can live with like, you know, 1,000 instant message windows at the same time. So they will probably build around this visual culture we have today, this abstract culture.
This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow talking with John Maida, author of The Laws of Simplicity. I have to say, John, that I'm a Mac user from way back, a convert from the PC system.
All right.
But I do think it has gotten harder to use.
Oh, my gosh.
I think the Mac has gotten harder to use over the years. I think the computer for the rest of us has, because it's gone to the Unix operating system under it, has caused us to type in things and do, you know, make some kind of commands and fixing it up harder than it used to be. Now, it certainly crashes less than it used to, that's for sure.
Right.
But I still think that the operating system has features in the old operating system that were better on. I mean, just for people to use, you know, as a simple device.
It was easier to select files and color them, for instance.
Yeah.
That was built in there. Now you have to look through that, your favorite sub-menu of menus.
Yeah. I mean, I still am a Mac lover, but I still think there are certain points that that they sacrificed in going to the newer system. We'll see what the new system looks like. The new one's supposed to be gorgeous. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Norm in, is it Niceville, Florida?
That's right.
What a Niceville place to live.
Well, it's really nice out here. You know, I'm just out here working. But listen, I would preface this comment. I have bought the new iPhone, and I've had three of the Microsoft phones before. And I can tell you that in comparison to this Mac phone, those three phones were what I describe as user hostile. I mean, it just was like they just kept crashing, kept breaking down. With this Mac phone, you can get in, get out. You know, I'm very satisfied with it. I traded in for a Trio, and I thought that the Trio was all right. But this Mac phone, plus the serviceability, they keep it simple. And as you do with any Macintosh, which I've had like four of them, you know, you download a program, and you don't have to execute anybody with these programs. You just bam, bam, and that's it. You know, so I'm very happy with it. I think that I wish that Macintosh would go into the camera business, and I think they would give Nikon and Canon on their high-end level a run for their money. And I said I'm very pleased with this, with that, and the instruction and everything.
All right, thanks for calling.
Bye bye.
You know, it seems that they used to sell gadgets by how quick and fast and whatever they work, and now they sell them by how beautiful and easy they are to use.
Well, it's all about how skin deep is that beauty. Yeah. I mean, we bring up Apple a lot, and I was asked by Business Week, you know, what is the secret? Is it the secret that the great designers involved with that? I mean, they're great designers, of course, but it's the CEO, Steve Jobs, that has the vision to carry out a well-designed object, not just from the outside, but from the inside as well, make that happen in a company. And you'll see more and more CEOs become more like that, ones that can orchestrate the entire actualization of a well-designed object.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about that. We're talking about the new book, The Laws of Simplicity, with John Maida from MIT. And we'll stay on the topic after the break, so stay with us. More of your phone calls. What do you love? What do you hate about technology? What simple devices do you like? What could be made better? Maybe you've got an idea for something that we haven't thought about. 1-800-989-8255. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow, talking this hour with John Maida, who is author of The Laws of Simplicity. He is a graphic designer, visual artist, computer scientist, and founder of the Simplicity Consortium at the MIT Media Lab. I noticed, in your book, you bring a lot of the right side of your brain into the left side. You talk a lot about emotion and love and things like that. In designing and in talking about simplicity. And, for example, you have one section in your book, one of the keys that's necessary is called openness. Openness simplifies complexity. And you talk about it's hard for companies to say, I love you, but they can if they try to open up to you. How should they open up to us?
Well, I think that we're so mediated today, not just medicated, but over-mediated today. And in a sense, companies have a difficulty reaching out to their customers in a way that is sincere or even perceived as sincere, which is not easy at all.
And so what should be one of the keys here?
Well, I think the keys are being sincere, sort of hard to do, of course. But sincerity, it's just something that... having been involved in technology for a while,
honesty.
And involved in the arts and stuff, and being blessed with some great children, you just think about life a bit differently, and you think, well, how does it translate to business? And you see, in business, all aspects of business, it's great, warm people who have a hard time sort of like extending that warmth or honesty or sincerity out to the products, to the actual mm-hmm. customers. And so right. it's all waiting there. But how do you change that? I've seen books now about how now we're moving more towards a sort of kumbaya style of company, which I'm actually feeling quite positive about.
Of course, if you're honest, it's a lot cheaper.
It's much simpler.
It's simpler, right? You don't have to hire a lot of people to lie for you and well, remember all, and keep records of all those lies so you know what you were saying.
Well, that's the eighth law of simplicity. It's in simplicity we trust. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Trust. You talked about swimming. That was an interesting analogy you made about when you were trying to learn
yes.
to swim in the MIT pool. You learned about trust.
Yeah, I was able to escape the MIT requirement somehow as an undergraduate. I didn't swim that well, but when I grew up and came back to MIT, I took swimming with a freshman and had a great swimming teacher at MIT. And, you know, the way I learned how to swim is he just said, just float, just trust the water. And that changed everything. I can swim now. I feel great.
Hmm. Let's go to Ron in Long Island. Hi, welcome to Science Friday, Ron.
Hi, how you doing? You know, tying along with what you're saying about loving the products, I'm an electrical engineer. I've been doing this for like 25 years, designing products. And I always find that if you don't use the product you're designing, you're probably going to make it overly complex because you got all these features that people want you to add. You kind of just throw them in. You throw them in the easiest way to design it, but not necessarily the easiest way to use it. Right? And I think that Macs get good press because the guys that are designing it, the people that are designing it, probably love what they're building, and they use it, and they know how it should work, and they know how it shouldn't work.
What
so just a comment.
Good comment.
That, I think, yeah, it ties in with what you guys were just talking about.
John?
I think that, what the guest is pointing out is that the more familiar you are with something, the easier it is to use. And I think that when you're making something, you know, I see it every day at MIT, you have great technologists making stuff and adding more features because you can. But his point is important. Let them use it. Let them understand it. But at the end of the day, no matter how complex something is, if you know how to use it, it's going to be easy to use. Sort of a paradox, really. Mm-hmm. I like to point out that most people complain about their cell phones, that they're too hard to use. But imagine like going into like a Verizon store and saying, you want that phone, and the person says, great. Well, now you'll have to step into that room and take the two-hour test to use your whatever phone. And if you pass it, I'll let you buy the phone. I can guarantee you everyone will be able to use their phones, but will they pass the test?
Mm-hmm. But aren't we all then beta users? I mean, aren't we all testers and guinea pigs for all this this technology that hasn't been actually figured out to the final degree yet?
That's such an important point. I mean, I think that I was looking at an MP3 player in a magazine being advertised as, and on top of this great functionality, it has a ROM you can easily update later on so we can fix it for you later. So they build in this, sort of like you're saying, this beta testing system. You're so right.
And what other age would we have stood for this? When television came out and when radio came out, did we think of ourselves as the guinea pigs for the developers? We expected a TV that worked. You turn it on, and it was two buttons, right? The channel change and the volume. And you had a little vertical and horizontal control, right? We expected – here, we're just satisfied by saying, okay, I'll get the next version, the 2.0 version of it.
Well, if you think about it, technology wasn't advancing that quickly before. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like every day I go into MIT and students show me something brand new, which is quite exhilarating. At the same time, it's quite frustrating. Because like going back to your chip point, I mean, anything with a chip in it is going to be complex. It just defies gravity. You know, it used to be that if something is small, it was simple. If something was large, it was complex. Now you put a chip in a spoon and it can be anything. It can be a magic wand or a stock ticker or whatever because it has a chip in it.
And
it defies reality.
And who makes that decision to put the chip in the spoon?
I think technologists do in the end. I mean, they see an opportunity and they want to exploit it and they think they might find it cool and go after it. That's why we're entering an age where technologists are asking more questions. Is this actually relevant? Is this important? Can I use it? And that's a new breed of students coming out places like MIT, I think.
Is that right? They actually are questioning whether we need this sort of stuff.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. In the opening dust jacket of your book, you say, finally, we are learning that simplicity equals sanity. I wish they made cell phones a little more sane. Is that what you mean there, that the new generation of science?
Yes, because they are, going back to your guest's point, they are all users. They are avid users of the technology. Mm-hmm. They complain, and they will fix these problems. It's a very different time. Mm-hmm. And also, they're very sensitive to, going back to the whole thing of, they're very sensitive to visual media. They're very sophisticated. If you think about it, all the motion graphics we see on TV today, it's just amazing how people perceive the visual domain. Mm-hmm. And these kids today have this built into their brain.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-999-8255. It seems that the theory of simplicity, while we are talking about technology here and old gadgets, and we did touch it on a bit, about it a bit, it really does, it could apply to anything. It could apply to the person, your personal life, your business, your social life, things like that.
I get email from people who are like the Florida Asphalt Layer Society or like mm-hmm. a Vintners Society, whatever. People are really respond to the laws because they're quite flexible.
1-800-998-255. Back to the phones. Let's go to Andy. And is it Lahara, Colorado?
It is Lahara.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention something. It's simple. It's just silly. And that is, the first chainsaw I ever owned was green. So you took it up in the woods, and then you lost it. You spent a lot of time looking.
Well, that's how they sold more chainsaws, I guess.
I guess it looked good in the store. That was something like that.
All right. That's a great story. Thanks for calling, Andy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that makes me question, you mentioned the chips were put in by technologists. I'm believing sometimes that the chips are put in by the marketing people.
Well, both, really. Yeah. I mean, you can imagine like technologists picketing the marketing people. That might happen in the future. We're hoping for that.
Mm-hmm. And where are the new designers coming from?
The new designers are coming from both sides, from both art schools and technology schools. We see the emergence of hybrid people mm-hmm. who wield technology and art with the same level of mastery, which is quite exciting.
Yeah. You know, because I think I remember when I was in 10th grade studying geometry and mm-hmm. my math teacher did a proof on the board, and he stood back and he said, "This is elegant." I'd never heard the word elegant applied to math or a proof before. And when you looked at it, the proof really was elegant. Hmm. And it seems that could be the same, of design. When you look at it, to me, when you see great design, it looks elegant and it just stands out by itself.
Well, it's the ability to appreciate what is abstract.
Yeah.
It's not a natural thing. It's like, wow, that's just, that concept makes so much sense. That design works so well. It's an abstract instinct, which can be augmented by a lot of marketing, actually.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the great designers today?
Oh, many of them are dead. they were very good when they were dead. One of my favorite designers was Paul Rand. Mm-hmm. He was the designer who designed the IBM logo and the ABC logo and UPS logo. He was the quintessential American graphic designer. He was unique because he had a sense of play, and that's very important. You can design something to be brawn, sort of perfectly engineered to withstand, like, you know, bullets at mm-hmm. 7,000 miles per hour or whatever. But you can also design it with play, and Paul Rand's hallmark was play. It's why we love Italian brands usually,
right?
Because they're not funny per se, but they're humorous. They're human in a way.
I think some of the things we like, and we've been talking a lot about Apple, Macintoshes, and iPhones, I think some of the things that make these attractive, and you might argue that the iPhone is not cheap, is that they are actually bringing great design down to consumer prices. And I'm talking, making reference to what you talked about, is Bang & Olufsen products are just gorgeous and well-designed, but they cost an arm and a leg to own.
They're kind of hard to buy.
And I think that some of the beauty of these other products that we're seeing is that you can actually afford to buy some of these things.
It's true. I mean, most of those great design things are made of unobtainium, whatever. But now, companies like even Target are bringing design to the masses, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
However, anything with a chip in it, though, the scales change. I mean, Apple succeeds because it has such software expertise. As more companies have more software expertise, we'll see things being just as good as Apple's things, I believe.
Mm-hmm. On the other scale, you do in an expensive design, you have Graves, who makes all those Target tools.
Right.
I'm sure you're familiar with
those. Oh, definitely. Uh-huh.
Gorgeously designed. Are there people who say, I'm going to design for the masses and not be snobbish about how much it's going to cost?
Yeah. Like any population of people, we have all types. I think in the design world, you have those who will refuse to design for like the snobs per se, design for the masses, and those who will always choose to design for the snobs. It's pretty well spread out.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Is it Nick in Beaufort, South Carolina?
Yes, this is Nick speaking. Mm-hmm. I was a chief R&D test pilot for a helicopter company designing cockpits, and we crossed through a lot of the rules that John is publicizing now, so I really appreciate the point of view. And I have to say that one of the things we discovered is simplicity on the device is often complexity under the skin. Mm-hmm. The idea that, for example, we design a gas gauge. Right now, a gas gauge tells how much fuel is in the car, but it doesn't say how far you can go. It leaves to us the calculations for everything else, and the complexities put in the human user, so we run out of gas. A fuel gauge that actually tells you how far you can go, or superimposed on a map that says what the car can do for you, is an example of putting complexity behind the device and simplicity in the user's hands.
Mm-hmm. Good point, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Would you agree? Let me just remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with John Maida, author of The Laws of Simplicity, Design, Technology, Business, and Life, right there on the cover as we were talking about it. I guess that would be the ultimate definition of simplicity, would it not be, that there could be a lot of complexity underneath it, but you shouldn't see it?
Oh, that's it. The guest's point is extremely elegant. I mean, it's this idea that simplicity is about filling in the next blank without you thinking about it. That's mm-hmm. what it is about. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to achieve. Also, I mean, it does depend upon your context. Depending upon how you're feeling, you might want to know how far you can go. But maybe on that one day, you had to know down to the milligram how much gas was in the tank. So it's all the context of use.
Mm-hmm. Let's see how many calls we can get in the few minutes left. We have Jonathan in Ringo's, New Jersey.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. Just a very simple tool. It's actually a nail set. And what the designer had done was, instead of having a separate punch, if you will, and a hammer in a hand, you're actually able to, it's spring-loaded where you can pull it back, and it just drives the nail head below the wood surface. And I know that it's simple and very useful, because when I can't find it, I'm really aggravated. So that's just my two cents.
I have that, actually.
You do?
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
What's very interesting is that it's fairly specialized in its own right. They're not carried everywhere, but when you've used it, you know that you've got something good in your hands that's very well designed and very productive.
I think that's a definition of well designed. Is you know something that you have good when you have it in your hand.
It feels right. That's it. Not technical, but you know, it's a good tool.
How did you find it, Jonathan?
Well, actually, I happened to see somebody else using it, and I'm not in any specific trade, but just as a general homeowner, and I thought, boy, that's really clever, and I just, you know, the power of the web was able to find it online, and I'm glad that I do have it. So, you know, old school, hammer with nail set, you know, this definitely replaces it, and it really does what it's supposed to do extremely well.
All right, thanks for calling, and good luck with it.
Good.
1-800-989-8255. Tell us how brainstorming works at MIT in your lab. Do you have people, and your students, sit around and think a good design or bad design, or does something pop into your head?
And we do a lot of critiques and sort of basically hit each other with bad ideas and good ideas like any other place. I think the power of MIT is everyone's so freaking smart there that it's kind of like one of those Fight Club type of scenes, but it's quite exhilarating.
Yeah, well, that's good to have smart people sitting around thinking about things. But, you know, they're not sitting – are they eating Twinkies like they used to do in the old days?
Ding-dongs, definitely. Yeah, upgrade, chocolate-powered.
Got to bring some chocolate into it.
There you go.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us. It was really enjoyable. And
thank you.
Your book, The Laws of Simplicity, 10 laws in there, a few corollaries inside John Maida, who is written The Laws of Simplicity at MIT. He is the graphic designer, visual artist, and computer scientist, and founder of the Simplicity Consortium at the MIT Media Lab. I highly recommend this book if you're looking for something to straighten, simplify your life. Good luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.